Time now on Community Connections to join the West Country with Scotland. If you, like me, grew up with the willow industry as a backdrop, and none of us here are that far away from it, you may wonder whether the art of willow and weaving is still going strong. Well, our next guest can confirm that it is. From her home near the sea in Edinburgh, let's welcome willow artist Anna Liebman. Anna, welcome to Community Connections and Read on the Radio.
Thank you. That was a lovely intro.
It's still going strong, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that there's been sort of peaks and troughs and a definite sort of like downtime. And my understanding of, you know, the sort of willow growing in the West Country is that there really used to be a lot more of it. And there's really just a couple of kind of old family firms that are still growing willow, which I do buy some of my willow from, as well as growing my own willow, which is kind of how I got into basket making, was through growing the willow, because, you know, willow likes the wet. We've got lots of that in Scotland. So I do think that there is a kind of persistent uptake, if you like, kind of going on in Britain at the moment, and since I started making baskets. Because if I look at the training opportunities when I started making baskets, there was absolutely nothing. I went on a course for a day, and then we were growing willow, the place that I lived, which was in southwest Scotland. We were growing willow for another basket maker who wanted specific varieties and wanted them grown organically, which of course they're not when they're grown on a larger scale, kind of on the Somerset levels. And, you know, largely there's been one very popular variety called Blackmoor, which is a Salix triandra, and it's a wonderful basketry willow, but it's quite susceptible to pests and diseases, and so it's not what you'd grow on a small scale in Scotland. Anyway, so this amazing basket maker called Lisa gave us all these different varieties with all these wonderful colours, and we were growing that for her, and that's kind of how I got into making baskets, was through managing that patch and kind of extending it. I went on this course for a day, and then there was a sort of basket making like self-help group that met in the village hall locally, in terms of, you know, I live very rurally, and so 15 miles away was just next door. And I kind of went to that, and I just kept practicing, because you really do need to practice a lot, and a lot of it is about understanding the material. And, you know, there's often a perception that it's kind of bendy like a piece of string, but actually it's a piece of wood that's got suppleness for, you know, a window of time whilst you've soaked it in water. And you have to be very strong with it, but controlled. And when I got going, I put a notice out for to see if I could get an apprenticeship or something like that with any makers in Scotland, and nobody replied. There was nothing, you know, it's obviously a very difficult thing to be in a position to offer an apprenticeship, and I quite often get people saying, oh, could I be your apprentice? And I'm just like, well, I can't afford it. I don't have money to pay you to kind of cover that time, or to take time out of my own teaching anyway. So I just had to kind of practice by myself. But if I look at the teaching landscape now, there's a few sort of significant makers who have kind of, you know, probably been making baskets for a similar amount of time to me, or even less. There's one particularly called Eddie Glue, he did get an apprenticeship. He got funding through the Queen Elizabeth Scholarship Trust Quest, and got a really good grounding, and is now doing a lot of teaching. And really, the standard of basketry is therefore sort of like going up. And he's got kind of online courses for people who are kind of, you know, because there's lots and lots of beginners classes, and, you know, and I do teach lots of things like that because there is a demand for it. But it can be more challenging to get kind of more advanced or medium level sort of tuition. And yeah, I think there is sort of more and more of it going on. I think lockdown saw a lot of people sort of saying, oh, I'm gonna do away with that job and have a go at doing this. And so there was a kind of upsurge of lots of people taking it on. But also, without the training or the time put in, you're able to make kind of, let's say, like, you know, smaller items or things involving not particularly large willow. But if you see the kind of log basket that I've got behind me, to make something like that on repeat, I'm working with willow that's like 7 or 8 foot long. It's big stuff. And you do, like I said, have to be sort of quite forceful. And that has taken me years to kind of get to that point. So, you know, there's still kind of Yeah, there's still, even once you can make a basket, you know, let's say a kind of fruit basket sized thing, that doesn't mean that you can then be like, now I'm going to sell log baskets for a living, because it's a different thing. So I think a lot of people took it up and kind of went semi-professional at that point, and I think that sort of maybe dropped off. But there's another training thing that has come up in Shropshire. There's a college called Westhope College, and they run a City and Guilds course, and that's also relatively new. Had its first intake just before lockdown. So there's definitely more kind of routes and training available now, like good quality training, not just kind of like, here's the basics, now off you go. So I do think it's looking, yeah, like healthier than it looks. And I'm quite envious actually of people who kind of come into basket making now, and then you have like, there's all this internet stuff and social media, you know, on Instagram, you can get all kinds of like inspirations for, you know, what to make and how to do things and that kind of thing. And none of that, you know, it was just like books and the randomly meeting another basket maker ever so occasionally when I got going. I sound like a dinosaur. It wasn't even that long ago. That's less than 20 years ago. So, yeah.
Anna, let me ask you, what's the biggest basket you make and what's the smallest basket you've made?
Generally, like I make quite a lot of baskets. I've got a basket, I've got it on my website, on my Etsy shop, called a garlic basket. I make a lot of them because they're kind of like, they're fairly unique, they're actually useful. The price point is very affordable because they're quite quick. They kind of have a spiral of weaving up them. And that's not the smallest thing that I make, but it's probably the smallest thing that's like actually a basket, if that makes sense. I mean, the largest thing that I make on repeat again and again, laundry baskets. That's quite special. I mean, a lot of my designs, as it were, have come about through it, partly about the willow that I've had available, because I grow my own willow, I've got lots of nice colours, and that's kind of, you know, that has been my sort of my path in. So the basket that I've ended up making and has become the model on my website has got all these different homegrown willows in it and all these different colours. And actually, if you kind of look about other professional basket makers in Britain, that there aren't many of any other people actually kind of offering that. So that's probably the largest thing that I have kind of on offer. I did once make a sculpture for a kind of, we have an event up near Pitlochry in Scotland called the Enchanted Forest, and it's a kind of sound and light show. And for that, I made, they were essentially very large baskets without bottoms. They were lighthouse sculptures, and there was like a sort of twirling light at the top. I didn't have to do that. I just had to sort of supply the kind of the tube, and you know, I had this kind of open section in the middle, and they were made in 2 meter sections, and so some of them were about 2.5 meters by the time they were done, because there was like a cap that was a separate bit on top of the lighthouse, and then the largest one was 2 2-meter pieces, and so it was about 5 meters by the time it was done. So that was quite big.
I love the idea of a woven lighthouse. Anna, how can my listeners find out more about you and perhaps even place orders? Are you sending orders out around the country?
Yeah, I've got you can look at my website, which is annaliebman.net, and there's lots of information, and I'm trying to kind of create things like a willow blog about my new willow patch in Edinburgh. And I have a web shop there, and I can post stuff out all around Britain. And then I also have an Etsy shop and a Folksy shop. They're sort of largely the same. Etsy is international and Folksy is a Britain-based thing. And from both of those, that's mostly got smaller items, and they can be like shipped internationally, and it's all set up for that. And you can buy things, I think, on my website. I've said if you want it dispatched internationally, to email me, because it was too complicated to set it up kind of like that. But yeah, it should be there. It should all be getting updated all the time. But yeah, all these things are always a work in progress.
Anna, as a person who grew up near the willow industry down here in the southwest of England, I'm very pleased to know that it is still going very strong. You're getting some of your willow from Somerset, which for us
Yeah.
down here is great to know. Can I wish you all the best for the future? Your website address, annaliebman.net. Keep us up to date with how things are going, particularly if there's any more lighthouses or possibly maybe ships next time. Who knows?
You never know. Thank you. Good to meet
Thanks,
you.
Anna.